Sure is, with our special guest, physicist Sean Carroll. You've heard what we've been talking about. Let's take some of your calls as we continue chatting with him on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Sean Carroll with us, of course. His work, The Big Picture, on the origins of life, meaning, and the universe itself. Sean, if you could get one question answered, just directly, you get it from who knows where, what would the question be?
Am I allowed to say, what are the laws of physics?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Any question you want.
Yeah, what are the laws of physics?
And these laws of physics, we talked about whether they change or not, and generally they do not, except in cartoons and comic books and things like that. How did they get to be so uniform? How did the laws get to be so rigid?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's one of those questions that is deep enough that we don't even know whether it's a question we're allowed to ask. You know, when you say, how did they get some way, that sort of gives the impression that something must have made them
that
way.
That's my way of tricking you.
Right?
That's right.
And we don't know if there was an alternative or not. You know, it might just be that that's the way it is. Or it might be that, you know, the laws of physics are different from place to place. Maybe they change very gradually. Maybe we only find intelligent life in the regions of the universe where they're not changing that gradually so that we have time to settle down and come into existence.
What do you think of people's abilities to be somewhat clairvoyant, to be somewhat psychic, to be able to tap into something that's out there and, you know, and know that, hey, my Uncle Bill is going to be calling me tomorrow and bing, he calls. Or something like that. How would you categorize all that?
Yeah, I'm very skeptical that that is anything beyond the ordinary senses that we have. It's, again, something where it doesn't fit into the way that nature works, as far as we can tell on our best scientific investigations. And the evidence for it is kind of sketchy and anecdotal. It never happens under carefully controlled conditions.
Have any of your peers read the book yet?
Yeah, some of them.
What do they think?
It all depends on what you're going to count as my peer group. Generally, it's been quite positive. I've been quite pleased because I try to do a lot in the book. Some people, and I knew this was going to happen, you know, they rather than reading what I actually say, they project onto it what they think I'm going to say, and they object to that. So that can always be a little bit frustrating. But I've had a lot of very good feedback from people who thought that it covered a lot of ground very, very quickly, but in a fun way.
Well, you'll get a lot of calls tonight, Sean, and I'm pretty sure that almost all of them will be very dignified and decent for you. They will challenge you. They will question you, as I have been. But most of our listeners, believe in a higher intelligence. Most of our listeners believe in life after death. Some of them do not. And you're going to get those calls too. But as long as we can keep it as a nice dialogue, it'll be well worth it.
Yeah, I'm happy to have that conversation.
Now, there are some physicists who believe in God. There are some physicists who believe in life after death.
Yeah, there are some priests who are atheists.
Throw them out.
There's all sorts of people who believe in all sorts of different things.
So what are you saying?
Well, I'm saying that, you know, I hope that when we decide what to believe for ourselves, our standards for making that decision are a little bit higher than just there exists some person who has this belief, therefore I will have it.
Okay, let's go to some of the calls. We'll go to August in Katy, Texas. Welcome to the show on the Wild Card Line. August, go ahead.
Hi. Well, I'm 55 years old, and the one thing I've learned in life at half my age was that whenever I thought at one point that I knew everything about electronics, because that's the field I'm in, I was a pretty cocky guy. And everyone that I came in contact with, you know, I was good at what I did, and I was called a hot dog in my job. And it took me a little while, but then I came across a couple of guys who knew so much more than me that it really humbled me and brought me right back to reality. And what I'm hearing in you, I guess your name is Sean?
Sean it is, yeah.
Okay. What I'm hearing in you is even in your own community, you're explaining everybody away with just a flippant comment who doesn't agree with your view of the universe and everything, which is incredibly disturbing because there are guys out there in science that are Christian, you know, guys that believe, and they've dedicated themselves, you know, to this same, you know, thing about the universe and about wanting the facts. And they literally go searching for those facts here on Earth to see if, you know, like, not just the Bible, but the actual Dead Sea Scrolls and all the information that they found in the original Hebrew and stuff. They go out there to find the physical evidence. And then when they find this stuff and they've got just incredible documentation, even in cave dwellings and all kinds of stuff that if you just look, it's there. And somebody like you comes along and you say, you know, and I've seen it with Stephen Hawking too. The man's a brilliant man. And yet, as soon as his people that, you know, were under him, that were being mentored by him or, you know, just in that same realm, as soon as they start getting just a little bit older, they turn around and they start making fun of him and discounting him and saying that they're the ones with all the knowledge and everything can be explained through science. Well, that flies in the face of people who lived it. And that's what I'm trying to say to you. If you're outside the game in the parking lot and you're literally hearing the game from out there with a bleed over from the speakers, and you've put it together and you start saying, you know, what's going on in the stadium, you're not in the stadium. So if you're going around saying, well, I was a kid and I grew up and I was in the church and, you know, and I saw that and loved the pews and all that stuff, but then as I got older and I got wiser and I got smarter, I basically realized that, you know what, I explained it all because you can explain all things through science. And I'm telling you, sir, that you are incredibly wrong and going to be held responsible for all the people that you're misleading away. Go read Romans. You can explain that away too. I know.
All right, let's get some reaction. Sean, I thought things were going to be calm, but right out of the box, I guess not. So it'll be one of those evenings. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I think that all that any of us can do is evaluate the evidence and the information that is put in front of us the best we can. It's clearly true that different people come to different conclusions about things. And I think that, you know, this is why it doesn't mean very much when you say that there are these other people who disagree with you. Of course, there are other people who disagree with me. There are other people who disagree with you and with the caller and so forth. I think we actually have to look at the individual argument. We can't just say there are people who feel otherwise. And even when we look at the individual arguments, when we look at the data, when we look at the information, we will come to different conclusions. What I did in my book, what I do in the book, The Big Picture, is I try in as fair and even-handed a way as I can to lay out why I have reached these specific conclusions. And like I said earlier on the show, if new information came in that was contrary to what I thought was true, then I'll change my mind. But right now, I'm just doing the best I can to understand the world with the information I've been given.
Have you, in your career, ever thought about the possibilities that you might have had a miracle happen to you, or you may have had some kind of psychic experience?
Yeah.
Or anything like that. Has that happened to you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, like you know, you use examples like you have this feeling that your uncle's about to call you, and your uncle does, in fact, call you. Now, the danger with things like that is that if your uncle calls you, you remember it, and it goes down in your memory banks as a hugely influential event. If it doesn't happen, then you forget about it. There's a huge selection bias in this game. I remember very, very clearly when I was in college once, I woke up, I was asleep, and I had this very strong feeling that my grandfather was shouting for me, that he was, you know, reaching out to me. And so I called the next day, and, you know, nothing like that had happened. He was fine. Nothing had gone on. It was just one of those feelings that you get when you're in the middle of a dream or something like that. So again, you have to evaluate all the data, realizing that we human beings are tiny and irrational and fallible. So it's not about like being wiser and being smarter and having it all figured out. It's approaching the universe with great humility, and whatever your conclusions may be, they're just the best that you can do with the information that you have.
Okay, let's go to Brenda in Old River, Texas now. Hey, Brenda, go ahead.
Hello, George, and hello, Sean.
Hello.
John. I want you to debunk these. I have two instances of people that's on the other side that have reached out to me. Okay, the first one. I had this feeling, I'll try to make it short because I told them on George's show before. I had this feeling all through my body, the most wonderful feeling, better than any drug, a tingling electrical feeling. And I've been worried about my son, but in my head, I felt, you don't have to worry no more. He's okay. At the exact time, the very exact minute I had that feeling, I found out that my son had died in a car crash. Okay, the second one. My son, younger son, was just learning to talk. And we were sitting in the living room, and he was just standing there in a hallway looking into a black bathroom, dark bathroom, for minutes, just standing still, stiff. And then he came running in the living room and got so frustrated because he was saying, "It's for you, it's for you." And I didn't know what he's talking about. And I had a picture, a small picture of my mother on the piano. Never showed it to him. He never met her. I never told him anything about her. He climbed up on the piano bench and pointed at her picture and said, "It's for you, it's her."
I remember
now,
that.
Yeah. Debunk, please.
Well, so how do you argue against some kind of strange paranormal experience like that, Sean?
Yeah, you know, I think that experiences like this happen, where, you know, there's this weird coincidence or, you know, weird juxtaposition of different things that you could imagine very easily explaining through some kind of paranormal phenomenon. On the other hand, you have to be careful. You know, this is what has led to all the wonderful scientific advances over the last 500 years, the fact that we human beings need to prevent ourselves from fooling ourselves. We are pattern-seeking, meaning-seeking beings, creatures. This is what evolution has trained us to do, to make connections, often when they are there, but sometimes when they are not, which is why when we make real progress in science is when we very, very carefully control for all the different possible explanations, make sure that we're not filtering out the data that we don't, that doesn't fit our ideas, and keep the ones that do. You know, events like this can happen, and it's just, again, if I think there would be a very strange world to live in if events like this could happen, but they remain always at this periphery of never being quite reproducible or testable or obvious. It's just much easier for me personally to believe that these kinds of coincidences happen and the world is still obeying the laws of physics.
What about faith? Where does faith fit in here?
Well, I think that faith is another one of those words, like God, that different people invoke to mean somewhat different things. Some people take faith to be a belief in something that is absolutely unshakable, that there is no possible new information or thought that would ever stop them from believing something. Other people take it to mean sort of a kind of belief that they don't need evidence for, even though they might change their minds about it some other day. I think that every kind of belief system requires assumptions. You know, we need to start someplace, because otherwise we could be just living in a computer simulation or something like that, right? Rene Descartes had the famous thought experiment where a demon was taunting him and feeding him all this wrong information. So we have to assume that's not true. We have to assume that the basic pieces of the universe that we think we see are really there. But the difference to me with that and faith is that we should always be ready to change our minds if the information comes in. as long as you're willing to update your beliefs when better information comes along, then it doesn't matter really to me whether you call it faith or just some other kind of belief.
Let's go east now. Carl is with us in Ohio. Carl, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Are you telling me to go ahead?
Yes, sir.
Well, sir, I'm also in the area that you're in. That's my background. And not a theoretical, but I'm a PhD in aerospace engineering, but Einstein one time, and not trying to quote a great mind, because your mind parallels that type of a person, but I was in a McDonald's, and a guy said, you know, Einstein is an agnostic. And then I thought about the first law of thermodynamics, which says matter can neither be created or destroyed. And I said, well, that means by man. Now, there's something that can create, or something has to happen to cause the universe, like the Big Bang. The second law of thermodynamics says energy and matter are mutually convertible, like photosynthesis,
that's right.
Electrolysis or something. Okay. Well, my question is when you say that you don't believe, I'm not into that side of the fence. All I'm into is how do you think this universe was created? See, Einstein says, I believe in one supreme God. Now, that's not trying to put somebody on my side that's superior to you, because I don't think that's the case. What I'm trying to say is that another theoretical physicist feels that he believes in one supreme God. Now, he qualified that. He said, I don't know if this God cares for us. In other words, that type of thing. It's not a religious thing that I'm looking at. What it is what created the universe? What do you think created the universe?
All right, and you're going to have to answer that in about a minute, Sean. Then we'll carry you over until the next break. Go ahead.
I can do that. You know, I don't think that anything created the universe. The universe may or may not be eternal. It may have existed forever, or it may have had a first moment in time. So the interesting question is, if it did have a first moment, could that simply be in accordance with laws of nature? It turns out that even though matter and energy are neither created nor destroyed, the total energy of the universe adds up to exactly zero. So the universe that we live in, we believe, according to our best current knowledge, is exactly the kind of thing that could have just had a first moment without anything creating it.
Sean, we're going to come back and talk more about that. That was a very perplexing question. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Sean Carroll with us, the physicist. Your calls as well, and we'll do it again next hour, too, in our final hour. Sean, that perplexing question about what created the universe, and it is frustrating trying to get some kind of answer on this question, because it's a tough, tough question, isn't it?
Well, I think it's even more than that. It's not just that it's a tough question. It's the kind of question that we don't even know whether it has an answer. Right? The answer
we don't. We really don't.
It just is. And you might not want that to be the answer, but that want is a very bad reason to believe or disbelieve something scientific.
You think it's a cop-out to simply say, God created it?
No, I think that's one of the possibilities that is on the table. I think that the evidence is against it, but it's definitely one of the possibilities.
Now, what I have a difficult time trying to ascertain is something created from nothing. I just don't get it. Help me.
Well, you know, why should it be easy to get? It's, you know, this is the kind of stuff that nothing in our history, personally, or as a species has trained us to understand. You know, we didn't grow up on the plains of Africa thinking about quantum mechanics and curved space-time, right? So this should be weird, bizarre, difficult to understand stuff.
I can't comprehend nothingness. Can you?
It depends what you mean by comprehended. I want to say yes, and someone else can say, well, I don't really comprehend it. I'm not quite sure how to prove that one way or the other.
So you look at the vastness of the universe, and I will always remember the Hubble deep space image that they shot into a dime size of darkness, and they had thousands and thousands of galaxies in that little dime-shaped picture.
Yeah.
When they just aimed it into nothing, could see anything with the naked eye, but Hubble could. It's overwhelming at the scope and the size of this universe. Now, is it endless, or do you come up to a wall somewhere?
Well, I love that image that you're talking about, the Hubble Ultra Deep Field, the Hubble Deep Field images. They really put into perspective, you know, how vast the universe is.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You see these little tiny splotches of dots of light, and every one of them has, who knows, 100 billion stars, a galaxy the size of our own. And, you know, to me, to then say, oh, I know why all this is there, it was created so that I could be here someday, seems a little bit presumptuous. But there's so much we don't know. We don't know whether the universe goes on forever or it's finite. We think that there's no end. We think that, you know, if it's finite, that just means it's sort of wrapped in on itself, like the surface of a sphere or something like that. We don't think there's any wall at the edge of the universe. But the universe could very well just go on forever. This is the kind of thing that is very hard to tell at our current state of knowledge.
Well, how do we know it formed 14 billion years ago?
Well, we know that there was something like the Big Bang 14 billion years ago. We see the universe is expanding now. We can actually trace the rate at which it was expanding back in the past by looking at light given off by distant stars and galaxies. And then we have the leftover radiation from the earliest moments of the universe, from a few hundred thousand years after the Big Bang. And that helps us calibrate how much stuff there is in the universe, how much matter and energy. And we have a whole bunch of, you know, a theoretical prediction given these parameters for how old it should be, and then we test that prediction against our observations, and it's exactly right. So we're really quite confident that 13.8 billion years ago, the universe was a extremely hot, extremely dense, extremely rapidly expanding place.
It is an amazing possibility to think of what it is, how it started, and what is going on in this universe. But in terms of the vastness of it, the scope and the size, and all these galaxies that you said, of course, could have billions of stars in each one, do you, without evidence and without proof, believe that there is intelligent life out there, like us?
You know, the only honest answer to give is that I don't know. I suspect there is, because it is such a big universe, but I don't know what the probability per star is that life arose at all around one of those stars. So, you know, you're multiplying a big number by a tiny number, and who knows what the answer is. So it would seem strange to me that we're the only ones. That would seem quite remarkable. But I think that we need to improve our understanding of the conditions under which life gets started to have much of a, you know, grounded viewpoint about that question.
All right, to the phones now we go. Let's go to Tessa in Yucca Valley, California. Hi, Tessa. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Do you know a George Poulos out there by any chance?
I'm sorry?
Do you know a George Poulos? He lives out there in Yucca Valley.
You know, the name is familiar with me.
Really?
I don't.
Good guy.
Good.
But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to share. First of all, I'm a Unitarian. And if you know anything about Unitarians believe in everything.
I do,
and
yes.
Their most important, the most important doctrine that they have is that you must discover, and it is a personal experience. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in the year 2000. I was given an appointment for surgery and a copy of a pathology report, which I took home. And because I didn't know what else to do with it, I began looking up terminology, which was a big mistake. I was so sad. I was so frightened. And I went to bed. And you would have thought that I would have had a nightmare, but I didn't. I had an incredible dream. I dreamed I was in a giant airliner, and there were rows of people in the middle, and there were rows of people on the side where the windows were, and I was like a flight attendant going up and down the rows. But I could see out the window, and all of a sudden, I could see treetops. And I was looking at the treetops thinking I should not be able to see anything, and I got very frightened. And I sat down in the back of the plane, and everybody else in the plane started to see out the windows too, and there was panic everywhere. And then all of a sudden I was at the front of the plane, and I could see where the plane was headed, and it was a giant river, and on the sides there were all these different animals, and inside the river, there were all of these animals, and I thought, oh my God, not only are we going to crash, but we're going to kill all of these creatures. But we did not crash. We landed ever so softly, and then a voice said to me, I am the pilot of this plane. I am in control. And I woke up, and I felt like, wow.
But it was just a dream, right?
It was a dream, but it was someone speaking to me and letting me know. And I knew that whatever happened to me, it was going to be okay. That there was a larger, there was a bigger power. And that he had me. He had my back. And whatever happened after that, I went into the surgery. I had no problems. I said, whatever happens, I'm okay.
Good for you.
It was a good thing, and I just wanted to share that because it changed.
Sounds like a miracle to me.
It was an epiphany.
Sean, what do you think?
Well, congratulations. I'm very glad that you had a successful surgery. I think that successful surgeries are a very good thing. And I think that can be celebrated by you or me just as well. I'm very, very glad that happened to you.
That's it?
Well, I'm not going to change my mind about the fundamental nature of reality because someone had a surgery that helped them cure their cancer. That's what surgery is supposed to help you do.
What if something happened in your life that was so overwhelming, so mystical? Could it change your mind?
Yeah, absolutely.
It would. You haven't had that yet, or even close to it?
No, not really. I think, I'm very, very happy with the view of the world that I have. I don't need to imagine that there is something beyond the world of things that I can actually see and touch and influence in some way.
Do you mind me getting somewhat personal with you on some questions?
Sure, go ahead. Late at night, I'm tired, I'll say whatever.
Don't fall asleep. You got another hour to go. Has anything ever happened in your life where it destroyed whatever faith you might have had?
No, I really think that it was much less dramatic than that. I think that I know a lot of people do have dramatic either conversion or deconversion events where they change their mind about their most deeply held beliefs. For me, it was quite gradual, and it was when I was young. You know, by the time I graduated from college, I was more or less where I am now in terms of what I believed about reality. But it was just sort of whipping my beliefs into shape more than any single dramatic event.
Because a lot of people who have, let's say, lost little children, they've died, lose their faith in God that they believed in. Because they basically say, how could you do this to us?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable question. You know, one of the oldest questions among believers throughout history has been, how can I believe that God has planned all this when there's so much bad in the world along with all the good in the world? You know, you might believe in free will and that God lets people do bad things, but there's also a tremendous amount of just sort of random, pointless suffering in the world. You know, small children getting cancer or being injured or just suffering in poverty, and you know they're too young to have done anything at all. And it's, again, exactly what you'd expect the world to be like if it were not planned or guided in any way.
Next up, we go to Dan in Sacramento, California. Hey, Daniel, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good,
George?
Dan. Thanks for holding. Super.
You know, I'm an Episcopal priest, and, you know, it's interesting. I'm kind of a middle-of-the-road guy. You know, I have a belief structure that there's a lot of human secularist scientific things going on, but there's also a spiritual dynamic, sort of the spiritual molecule of it all. And I think things land in the middle, and I think tonight's show and is very cool, but I think in some ways there's a little something missing here.
And what would that be?
Well, I mean, it's just, we can say everything's this scientific dynamic, and the show we're on has a spiritual component to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean it's a religious component, but, and I'm not saying that you're wrong with, you know, if you're golfing and lightning comes down, you happen to be there, and you get hit by lightning, maybe you die. But there are things in our lives that are sometimes spiritual unspoken aspects of things that are a greater dynamic that aren't just black and white. And it seems to me that you're into this human secularist black and white thing. And, you know, I mean, I really just don't think it all comes down to that. I really think there's, there's people starving in the world and die. And sure, there's children that get cancer and women that have breast cancer and the prayers aren't answered and they die. But there's also amazing things that happen within things that maybe are the luck of the draw. But there's a lot of unspoken things that you can't put words to sometimes, and people have feelings about things. Maybe it even goes beyond words that you're like, wow, hey, you want to know something?
Well, let's assume for a moment, Sean, that there's a science behind some of these metaphysical things that might happen. Is that possible?
That's fairly vague, as you phrased it right there. It depends on the precise thing. Anything is possible. Something being possible is a pretty low bar to achieve. I think what we should be asking ourselves is, you know, what is the best explanation we have for the complete set of all these different things that we observe?
We've got Skype caller now. Sean, let's go to our Skype now. Where'd our Skype caller fell off or something like that? So let's go to Brian in Ohio. Brian, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, how are you doing, Sean?
Good. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing pretty good. My thing is on the religious aspect, I believe that people that do good things and stuff in religion to help people is a good thing for like kids and stuff like that. That it's more of a people religion than it is for a God, you know. Mm-hmm. If you do good things and if religion sits there and helps you to do good things for people, I'm all with it. Now, my question is more on energy and time and space.
All right.
All right. I sit there and I've cranked numbers, and I'm just wondering what you would think of if it was going, space was going so fast that it would actually stop. I mean, the expansion would be like an illusion.
Put the brakes on.
That's why we couldn't go faster than speed of light, because if not, it would literally stop. All the energy is still there. It's just frozen in like time. Time is frozen, no movement. no particles moving. And I think that too, like gravity waves and stuff, is actually, we're like on, like, think of a river, that we are actually, it's not expanding, but it went so fast that we're just catching up to that speed. And then eventually what it's going to do is collide and either slow down and do the expansion or explosion again. What do you think on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that these are great issues to be thinking about when it comes to things like the expansion of the universe and moving at the speed of light, because even these questions, which I think that scientists, cosmologists, and physicists do have a very good understanding of, they're still very far beyond our everyday experience. So we sort of have to spend some mental effort wrapping our brains about what around what the science is trying to say. So when you say for when we say that space is expanding, the universe is expanding, the very first thing that people want to know is, you know, how fast is it expanding? Or can it expand faster than the speed of light, for example? And it turns out that that's a sort of a mistaken question even to ask, because the expansion of space doesn't have a velocity. If you think about what we see in the universe, we see distant galaxies moving away from us, and we attach a velocity to the distant galaxies. But what Edwin Hubble, the great cosmologist who discovered the expansion of the universe, realized is that the velocity of a galaxy moving away from us is proportional to its distance. If you have two galaxies and one is twice as far away, it's moving away from us twice as fast. So what is the speed of the universe expanding? Well, it's neither one galaxy or another. It's not even a speed at all. It's basically, you know, the percentage by which the universe grows each year.
Sean, I love this stuff, and I'm going to come back with you and more calls in our final hour next on Coast to Coast AM.